cloud native transformation is not about installing Kubernetes. It's all the processes, the company culture, everything needs to be impacted by it. But there is no avoiding like mentioning Kubernetes in these discussions. It's always like the base technology layer for that transformation.
This is DevOps Paradox, episode number 62. Kubernetes is dead. Long live serverless. Welcome to DevOps Paradox. This is a podcast about random stuff in which we, Darren and Victor, pretend we know what we're talking about. Most of the time, we mask our ignorance by putting the word DevOps everywhere we can and mix it with random buzzwords like Kubernetes, serverless, CI/CD, team productivity, islands of happiness, and other fancy expressions that make us sound like we know what we're doing. Occasionally, we invite guests who do know something, but we do not do that often since they might make us look incompetent. The truth is out there, and there is no way we are going to find it. P.S. It's Darren reading this text and feeling embarrassed that Victor made me do it. Here are your hosts, Darren Pope and Victor Farsa. Hey, Victor, how's it going today?
Excellent.
Excellent.
Beautiful morning or noon, or I don't know what it is here.
At the point that we're recording right now, it is 6:30 a.m. where I am. It's 12:30 where Victor is. And I've been up for about 20 minutes. And he said he's been up for 15.
Exactly.
He's living the rock star life.
We are synchronized. We wake up and go to sleep at more or less the same time, even though we are in kind of 7 hours apart.
Yeah.
Or six, or I don't know.
It's six, seven. At this point in the timeline of the world, it's about the same. We have our first repeat guest, I believe. I didn't actually do the math. So I'm officially going to say this is our first repeat guest, and we'll maybe he's back to beat us up this time. Adam, welcome back.
Oh, thank you, guys. I'm honored to be the first repeat guest. Oh.
I think people get confused when they say they're honored.
Yeah, exactly. You're honored when a queen makes you a knight, right? That's when you're honored.
Isn't this kind of the same?
Not yet.
No. No. The answer is no. So, and by the way, Adam, I didn't tell you this. This ought to be fun. So this is part two of a three-parter. So we are building a trilogy around Adam. This is the good trilogy, like Star Wars 4, 5, and 6, not 1, 2, and 3. There will be no Jar Jar Binks here. So what's going to happen? See, I should have talked to you about this. So today, if you're listening today's, when the episode's being released today is July 1st. Adam is going to be on with us on July 3rd on the live stream. Aren't you, Adam?
Of course.
Okay, good. We'll talk details later. And if he's not, please don't hold it against Adam.
No, hold it against Adam. You need to have a leverage against him.
I'm sorry. Exactly. We should have talked about this. I had it all planned out, and I forgot to talk to anybody about it. That's my fault.
If it's any consolation, Darren did tell me, but I forgot almost immediately afterwards.
Did I tell you?
Yes.
Oh my gosh. This is the problem when I don't go to bed by 9 o'clock at night. I don't remember anything. The topic that y'all were talking about, and this is how we're going to title it today, Kubernetes is dead.
Go explain, why do you think so, Adam?
Why do I think so?
Yeah.
I have opinions on this too. I have opinions.
Really? Come on. Go ahead, Darren.
Do you want me to go first?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So my opinion is Kubernetes is dead because many people that are running Kubernetes, and let's finish the sentence. Kubernetes is dead on arrival because people are taking it. It's like, oh, this is yet just another application I need to run. And they don't understand what they have.
and how much work it's going to take to actually run and operate a Kubernetes cluster?
I would rephrase it a bit and say that what I would really like to say is that I believe that Kubernetes will become irrelevant, not part of discussions, just like hypervisor is today, right? Kind of, I think that we are slowly going towards a place where actually there is Kubernetes somewhere, right? But you're not really even using it directly anymore. Similar, like, I don't know, like, if you go to Lambda, and I'm not suggesting that anybody should use Lambda, that's a separate subject, but there is some kind of orchestrator behind it, right? But you don't care about that anymore. And I think that that's the future, kind of, that it becomes an irrelevant implementation detail that most people don't care about.
Okay, so that's two very different statements for me to disagree with.
I wanted to get you out of your comfort zone.
Yeah. What you say, Darren, that basically people just underestimate the complexity of Kubernetes. I'm pretty sure that's the case in many cases, but I don't think that makes it dead in any sense of the word. So for me, the strongest indicator that Kubernetes is not, because when people realize that Kubernetes is maybe too difficult and whatever, that's by the time they already bet their company on it. So it's there. It's definitely not dead. It's just more difficult than anticipated. And what Victor says, I kind of agree with it, but just not in the like present tense. So Kubernetes will be dead someday, become commodity, but we are far away from that.
What is far in your case?
Let's say 5 years. Well, there is several things. Like, one is we still don't have any kind of platform to wrap Kubernetes into, right? That we talked about last time. There is nothing really that it would be a widely used platform which just hides away Kubernetes and people just like to use that thing and don't care about Kubernetes underneath. That's one thing. And the other is when I'm talking to clients, companies, still Kubernetes is mentioned in every discussion. Like anything, like cloud native transformation, and we're at Container Solutions are really all about like, okay, cloud native transformation is not about installing Kubernetes. It's all the processes, the company culture, everything needs to be impacted by it. But there is no avoiding like mentioning Kubernetes in these discussions. It's always like the base technology layer for that transformation.
Yeah, I agree. I think that what you just said makes a lot of sense. And 5 years since sounds like a reasonable kind of time frame.
Wild guess, so like, of course, I don't know. Everybody's guessing
in this industry, but yeah. I mean, I did, and I'm almost kind of embarrassed that I didn't dive into those things earlier. But now that I spent some considerable time with what's the name, Cloud Run and Azure Containers, I think, or something like that, it's amazing. Kind of, I love it. It's kind of like, it's so easy to use and so beautiful, unusable for larger companies without a doubt, but kind of that's direction. I became a believer in those things now.
You mean the thingy that just runs containers without being Kubernetes, basically? We just like, you give it a container and it starts it up.
Yes, basically, like the one I like the most is Cloud Run from Google, because it is Knative. You know what it is. It's even open source, right? It's just that you either tell it, this is my image, or you tell it, this is my YAML, which is kind of Knative YAML is like 20 lines altogether. Choose your level of complexity. Both levels of complexity are fairly not complex, right? Yeah. And just kind of, here you go, kind of that. Don't bother me, please. And if, let's say on-prem as well. OpenShift will almost certainly offer something like that. Or whomever is the player, right, in on-prem or cloud. It's similar to what we were talking last time about, you know, I think that I was mentioning Flagger, how it simplifies some things for the end user, not for the administrator, not for the sysadmin, but for the end user. Similar thing.
Yeah, Knative is definitely a interesting abstraction on top of Kubernetes. The most interesting thing for me about Knative is it would be completely, I love that something like Cloud Run actually uses open source under the hood, and you can understand how the whole thing works and like take it apart into components. That is great. But I read on Twitter some time ago a really good rebuke to all these Knative and these tools from somebody from AWS, of course. But he made a good point that it is very, very expensive to run these tools not at scale, basically. So the problem is when this tool is tied into Kubernetes, Kubernetes is already not great for massive scale. All big companies end up with tens or sometimes hundreds of Kubernetes clusters. Now, Knative can't bridge those clusters. So in the end, it doesn't really can't really employ like scale efficiencies in the way how Lambda can.
Yeah. But efficiency in terms of resources that you need to use?
Yeah, so like now, you actually have to manage like multiple control planes to be able to run in the end not that many functions on the same cluster.
Yes, but this is where I kind of disagree with, and mostly because it comes from AWS. Because to run AWS Fargate containers, right, which is equivalent of Knative, let's say in Google, similar, right? You need to create a cluster. You literally need to create a cluster. So, and if you create a cluster for something that you will not run at scale, it's just silly.
Yeah, absolutely. Like Fargate is weird.
Exactly. So you need a cluster even if you're going to run equivalent of one function, but this time it's a container.
But why would you compare Fargate to Knative? Wouldn't it Knative compare better to Lambda? Fargate is running a long-running process. Knative isn't.
Knative is, yes. So it scales down if there are no requests. But it's not like Lambda. One instance is one request, right? So one instance will handle, let's say, 100 requests, concurrent requests, and as long as the requests do not fall to zero for some period of time, it will always be running, right? So it's not really like Lambda. And I like to compare it because both of them, input in both cases is a container, right? In case of Lambda, I think that Lambda is closer to, I think that they call it Google function or something like that, right?
Yep.
Give me code. This is give me a container or container image.
Yeah, it's true that the model, how you supply your logic is different. But on the other hand, in Fargate, you still care about your process running. You know it's going to be one or you know it's going to be two. In Knative and Lambda, you don't care about how many instances are really running. Knative might implement it differently than Lambda, but you as the user don't care about it. So it's still more the functions as a service model, even though you define your function as a Docker image.
Yes. Yeah, it's a mixture of both and none of them, actually, now when I think about it.
Yeah, kind of. But so the important thing is that if you want to, let's say you would want to, you say functions as a service are like really the next thing.
Absolutely not. I hate functions as a service. because function is, in my context, my world, function is too small of something to be used on a considerable level.
I would like, let's say maybe how about we redefine functions not to like something which is a small function, like really like the math style and whatever, but more like the operational model where you don't manage whether your code is running, not running, whatever, it can run 100 instances. So the management platform is not like Kubernetes where you still care about how many instances of something is running, but the platform manages all your instances or scales down to zero and does whatever the hell it wants to do with it. In that sense, I think maybe actually the FAS model is could be the thing that like hides away on the Kubernetes, because it is really something which you don't really want to care about, is how many instances you're running.
I mean, you care about it, but you don't want to do it yourself.
And that's where the argument from this AWS person comes in. To if FaaS would be the future, then you really need those economies of scale, because you don't want to run like 100 Knative control planes in your company, as opposed to like, you know, like, because if you would really run, let's say, something like Knative and OpenShift on an on-premise platform, you'd have to manage all those Knative. And even if you run it in Google and Google does it for you, still there are many, many control planes. So it's, there is a problem with efficiency here.
But wait, that would assume that you would assign a control plane for each, shall we call it function, for each Knative instance.
Yeah, well, let's say Knative per cluster, right? And you always end up with many clusters in Kubernetes land, so that would mean many Knatives.
That's true, but I cannot even. Let's say you said in a company, let's say it's my Kubernetes cluster, right? One or 1,000 clusters. Why would they not run? Let's say that I have 100 applications defined as Knative. Maybe I have 1,000 others, but ignoring them, right? Why wouldn't I run those 100 Knative applications in a single cluster? Why would they have 100 clusters?
There are many reasons why. Well, reality, on one hand, there is reality where people do end up with many clusters. The good reasons are you can't run Kubernetes over different regions. So just different data centers. If you have like two data, if it's on premise, you have two data centers or just two regions in a cloud provider, you already have to split. Then there is the prod, non-prod. So Kubernetes is not really trustable enough to like some test workload couldn't take down your cluster. So this already and starts like the clusters start proliferating basically.
I agree with all that, but let me then better define example. You have two cases, 100 applications. I'm throwing an arbitrary number. 100 applications, normal applications, I don't know, deployments, stateful sets in Kubernetes, right? Running in a single cluster. There are other clusters, other applications, but imagine now this scenario, right?
Yep.
And now 100 of those same applications, when applicable, running as Knative. Would you have that scenario as Knative in multiple clusters, when a single cluster would fit your scenario for normal applications? So kind of if you would transform whatever you have in one cluster from deployment stateful sets into Knatives, would you use still the same cluster or 100 clusters?
I don't think the fact that I would be running things as Knative would really change how many clusters do I need.
Exactly. And you do gain something. So it's not that now becomes more expensive.
Oh, yeah, okay. It does. Because now I'm running many, many Knative control planes that I have to maintain and make sure they work.
It's fun. If in that scenario, right? I mean, there is one Knative CRD, let's say, or multiple CRDs. It is still one Kubernetes control plane. It's still the same cluster. You just changed the definitions from stateful set to deployment.
Okay,
to
yes, yeah. In a single cluster scenario, it's fine. Yeah.
Or let's say that you had five clusters and you converted applications in those five clusters to be Knative. Still, it still stays, continues being five clusters. You would not increase the number of clusters.
No. But now you have five Knative control planes.
Yes, and you still had five, but you get some different scaling, let's say. I'm not even going to say better scaling, because you can do the same scaling as Knative yourself. It's just not done by you. So I don't buy that argument, right? Now,
okay. I'm not buying it. I just don't know enough to know whether this is really a problem or not. Maybe actually nobody knows enough right now, because maybe nobody has tested Knative in such like seriously large deployments where you would try to really mimic Lambda with it. But I can see it as a potential serious problem because of the fact how Kubernetes works, because this is already defined by the fact that how Kubernetes works, you end up with many Kubernetes clusters. So any kind of technology that is tied into a Kubernetes cluster will be multiplicated basically over in a large, let's say, enterprise environment to many, many clusters.
I love what you just said, because I think that brings us to the beginning of the conversation. I'm deploying some function as a container image, as Lambda something, doesn't matter, right? I'm telling somebody, this is my application, run it. That's more or less the idea of. And we know that all those are using some form of containers. I'm certain it's not public knowledge, but I'm certain that there is some form of containers for Lambda. I know that there are containers for ECS. It's always containers, right? Now, I don't care anymore. I'm not saying that this is today, but some future. I don't care. Maybe Knative tomorrow will not run in Kubernetes, but it will run in, I don't know, something, Pepito. Maybe it will not be Knative, right? It becomes irrelevant in the distant future.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that would be also, I could imagine also a Knative implemented that can actually run the functions over multiple Kubernetes clusters. That like one Knative control plane mapping to multiple clusters, actually, why not? So it is doable. So, but these could be hurdles, but it is doable, and it's FAS could be the thing to replace the current operational model. But also there is the like all the efficiencies of like, let's say, running an application and keeping everything in memory, which is also not that easy to just lose. Even now, like a lot of things that implemented as functions will not work as efficiently. And actually, you can end up with a much larger AWS bill also by running something on Lambda instead of running just a single container which keeps memory state, actually. So these are, we'll see how long these things will be holding back this model there. Yeah.
Ultimately, probably it will end up like always with a combination of, I don't know, 15% on average is using that, just like 30% will be using Kubernetes directly, and then 70% will continue being mainframe, stuff like that.
But it is like interesting. The important thing is to realize what is the goal, really. And actually, there are multiple goals. There is simplifying operations, but there is also improving developer productivity. And the two don't necessarily always go hand in hand. Like what one needs or what the other needs. Because I think for developer productivity, building large monolithic applications is probably the best. As long as those developers don't end up, compiler just tells you what's wrong within your application. So it's much more fast than deploying 50 functions and then realizing in runtime that they just like don't work together well.
Yes, but on the other hand, to me, from developer perspective, working in a team that is bigger than 5-6 people, maybe 7-8, is horrible. So, my argument, I actually don't like to speak about, to use that much terms, microservices, monoliths and stuff like that. I don't think it's about that. It's about if the code base is so big that you need 20 people or 50 people to work on it, that's unacceptable. Doesn't matter what's the size. It can be like only 10,000 lines of code and still you need 20 people, kind of like it's a microservice. You cannot manage it like that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So like it is true that the monolith has like this limit where simply you just want different groups of people, different teams to be deploying independently without having to compile the one big monolith. That is true. You can't escape that.
No, it's okay. If you have a monolith, let's say huge monolith, but you can manage it with a small team, there is nothing wrong with it. I mean, there are some other things that we might discuss, but from people perspective, if you can manage it as 6 people, the size is irrelevant from that perspective.
Yeah, so does developer productivity and like operational simplicity go hand in hand? That's a good question.
And that is what we're going to talk about on the live stream. Okay. Developer productivity. Hey, at least we have a plan this time.
And you know what happens without plans? They last for around 30 seconds.
What? No, I get it. So I'm going to stop us right there. Because in 2 days, if you're listening to this in real time, come watch the live stream. What time is it going to happen? I don't know yet. I think I have the day off, so it doesn't matter. It can happen anytime. So you have to go subscribe to our Twitter feed, Twitter handle, Twitter, whatever, DevOps Paradox. Go subscribe there. That's where you'll get the notification. And we sort of know what we're talking about. Of course, I'll have to go back and listen to this as I'm editing to figure out what we're going to talk about, and then I'll make notes.
And we don't know yet whether Adam, we didn't check his agenda, can come or no. So if he cannot, I will practice imitating his voice.
Sounds good. I'll send my answers in writing and you can then pretend I'm saying them.
Yeah, do make an open letter, right?
you can pre-record all the answers and we'll just play them back. That would work. All right, great conversation today. We're going to pause it here. Join us on Friday, July 3rd. If you're listening to this after July 3rd, go over to YouTube. You'll find it. And watch part 3 of Adam. Adam versus Victor and Darren. Actually, it's more Adam versus Victor.
The next one we'll start with, now that Kubernetes is dead, serverless is dead as well. We are progressing in each conversation.
I think it's time we invented what comes after serverless. It's probably unikernels. It's always unikernels.
Then we're just back to where it all started. So, Adam, thanks for hanging out today.
Thanks for having me, guys.
We hope this episode was helpful to you. If you want to discuss it or ask a question, please reach out to us. Our contact information and a link to the Slack workspace are at devopsparadox.com/contact. If you subscribe through Apple Podcasts, be sure to leave us a review there. That helps other people discover this podcast. Go sign up right now at devopsparadox.com to receive an email whenever we drop the latest episode. Thank you for listening to DevOps Paradox.